Anyway, oh, I promised you a big kiss on this side, didn't I? You're not going to be... Well, I'll give you the kiss. You're not going to be able to let your folks listen to hardly any of this tape, are you? If what your mom says is correct, anyway. Hey, well, here, I'll talk about that later. But you know what you said in your tape, and I don't want you to feel like this, but I told you, you know, all my resolutions and how I quit smoking and how I was building my body and expanding my mind and all this. That's not to show you up, baby. That's to make you proud of me and so you'll love me and cherish me and everything. I'm not trying to make you feel like a crumb. And I kind of, you know, you're not going to, you know, you're not a crumb. You'll never be a crumb. And you, there's nothing, oh, anyway, if I express myself, I'm doing it for you, you know, for myself too, but I feel much better and when I quit smoking and since I quit smoking, there's not really much point in it if I don't gain back what I've lost through smoking and lack of exercise, because I used to be pretty good shape when I was in high school and everything. I'm just trying to get back what I've lost. It's not to, you know, do anything else, but just to, you know, be for you. It's just, you know, I may not have any love handles, but I have a muscle or two you can hold on to in the general, same general area. I still got my love handles, so. Okay, all right, okie doke, okay, and, wow, I was going to say something, and I forgot what it was, oh well, and, well, you know, something I just came to the end of my list. I'll tell you what, since you've, last time I wrote yesterday, I guess it got in the mail this morning, but I wrote yesterday, and I was in Saigon, I'll tell you, I don't know if you've ever heard what's going on around here or not, but there was a big flood in Malaysia, and you know where Malaysia's in the, what, East Indies or sound down there by, anyway, there's two R&R centers in Malaysia, one to Kuala Lumpur and the other is Penang, but anyway, there's a big flood down there, and the president of Malaysia or the prime minister or whoever runs the joint down there declared it a national disaster and requested aid or whatever. Anyway, the United States says, oh yeah, we'll help you out, we'll send you a whole bunch of helicopters and things, and we'll evacuate your flood victims and fly in food and Red Cross. You know, same old thing we did like in Hurricane Camille down in Mississippi. Anyway, our 12th group provided the aircraft and vehicles and everything for this particular thing here. So they had to take all the weapons off the aircraft. It could not be misconstrued as to the reason that the Army moves in down in Malaysia, because it's not a military support. It is a flood relief support, so I couldn't have anything, you know, down there to inspect one way or the other. But anyway, about 2 weeks ago, the group sent the aircraft and vehicles down there. Well, our battalion commander was named task force commander of this whole thing, so he's been down there, and our XO has been running the place. And major from group stayed at Hotel 3, which is at Tontanut. It's Saigon, coordinating these. I see that Air Force Air National Guard with C-124 is just flying all of our equipment to Malaysia. So we're coordinating loading the aircraft and getting people places, you know, all this business, you know. Anyway, this 2 weeks ago, this major did this. And, okay, well, now the aircraft crews are coming back. So I've been chosen along with another captain, Bob Dowling, as S-4 supply, I guess, you know, the supply portion of battalion headquarters. He and I are going down, well, we were there all day yesterday, and spent last night there. But we're going to coordinate them coming back, and so far we had one plane come in with two Hueys and 13, 14 people on board, but we had to get them a place to stay and get a transportation detachment down there to put the Hueys back together. They have to disassemble them somewhat to get them on the airplane because they're pretty big. Anyway, the flight that was supposed to come in tonight didn't come in. It's not expected till tomorrow morning, so we decided to come back to plantation here so I can sleep in my own bed. And bet, you know, I had to sleep on the floor in an office there in Hotel 3 listening to the phone all night because of everybody in the world trying to... The 1st Aviation Brigade is the backbone behind this thing, and so they're always wondering what's going on, and they're not always bitching about not being well enough informed and everything, so we have to sit by the radio and make sure that they... you know, get the word when they're supposed to. But anyway, that's what I've been doing, and tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock, I got to get back in a Jeep and go back down to Saigon again because that second plane load's coming in. It takes three plane loads. But anyway, I should, if we can get both plane loads tomorrow that's left, then I'll be back tomorrow night. And but I don't think we will. We'll get one tomorrow and one the next day. So I may come back tomorrow night and have to go down there again. I don't even know what day today is. Today's the 19th. Oh, today is Tuesday. Okay, I might have, be able to come back Thursday. But anyway, that's what I've been doing. And you know, I kind of wish I was at Saigon. Saigon is really out of sight. I got some pictures of it, but our driver, when we went down and came back, I tried to talk him into kind of going through town a little bit on the way to Tontonute Air Force Base. And he did, and took some pictures. And you know, I've got some thoughts and everything about this country, and you know, Saigon is just like, you know, being in downtown Los Angeles or someplace. Of course, it's not as modern or anything, but it is a big city, and it's very similar to European cities. You know, the streets are fairly narrow, and they have all these open shops and stuff. You know, it's very, you know, Europeanish. I guess anything other than the United States is foreign, and all foreign seem to be about the same, and it really is for some reason, whether it's in Europe or Asia or anything. But the buildings are all close together, like in San Francisco, but they have all these sidewalk stores and stuff, you know, sidewalk cafes, and people run around in three-wheeled bicycles with a fruit stand on the bike, you know, and driving around selling fruit. And, same thing, you know, in Europe has all the time. But anyway, you know, this Saigon is really a large city. There's very little militarily going on there. It's just a big shopping area, you know. And it just kind of occurred to me that the people in Saigon are actually oblivious to what's actually going on in Vietnam, you know. To them, it's just like you living in Riverside and reading in the paper that night that the big riot in Berkeley, you know, it's so far away that it really didn't affect you. But you know that it's going on. I mean, you read about it in the paper. Somewhere, somebody was actually tangling. And in Saigon, it's the same way. It's so actually far removed that people, the only way people know there's a war going on is they read it in the newspaper. And, of course, you know, you're thinking, or Jim's thinking, or whoever's listening to me talking right now, thinking that, you know, the bombs go off and everything downtown Saigon all the time. But that's just like those old mailbox bombings and everything else. They're so sporadic, so, you know, people just don't get all that bent out of shape, you know. It's sort of a scare-like thing, but it's not really a war. It's just a sabotage, you know, like somebody stuck a bomb in your mailbox like they did up in Canada there for a while. Of course, everybody got uptight about it. But that's the only war that they see in Saigon. It's just an occasional thing, you know. It's something that you don't count on daily. It's really outstanding. We went by the presidential palace and went down Tudor Street and saw all these bars and stuff in the way. And there's very few GIs down in Saigon like there used to be. I was down in the same area. I saw the Star Hotel, which I stayed in 67 when we came down for the new Huey when I was here before. But it looks the same, except there's not as many GIs downtown anymore. They have some sort of restrictions on going into Saigon, trying to keep the economy at a level, or at least stabilize it. Every time GIs go into town, the inflation hits, you know. GIs, whatever they want, they'll pay for whatever it costs, you know, and it screws it up for everybody else, as far as especially the lower-income people like the Vietnamese. But anyway, that's the only thing I noticed that was any different. People there are still, you know, they're dressed nice. You drive down the street, and all these, kids, I guess you call them kids our age, going to college. They got their books in their hand, you know, and their Western-type clothes, and they're walking and talking and singing and everything else, and going into college. There's, you know, Saigon's, there's a university there, and you got your plumbers and your sidewalk cleaners and window washers and just like any other big city. And it's really, you know, it's fairly civilized there, actually. And we also went through a couple of slummy areas where there's nothing but trash out in the streets. There was no curbs, and the streets weren't really paved. They were kind of hard surface, but they were full of potholes and garbage, and buildings were really dumpy looking, you know, and a lot of people out there dirty and running around the street, sort of like, I guess, any Burnside in Portland, I guess, or whatever, anywhere else you know about. But Saigon is just a big city, and no different really than any other big city. This, the people here of are Oriental instead of Caucasian and Negroid or whatever is the status quo. I imagine it's very similar to Hong Kong or someplace like that, which I've never been to, so I can't really compare. But anyway, I hope you've enjoyed my my views on what I've seen in Saigon. Long Bien, on the other hand, Long Bien is purely military. There's very few civilians, so to speak, around here. Long Bien is just like, you know, 15 miles northeast of Saigon, and it's a four-lane road all the way from Saigon to Long Bend. But Long Bend is just about, you know, headquarters for USAV and headquarters for MACV, but it's got all the headquarters for everybody. Headquarters 12th Aviation Group, headquarters for the 18th Military Police Brigade, for these headquarters for these Vietnam-wide units are all in the Long Bend area, Long Bend Plantation area. And it's really a civilized military post. You know, it's very similar to, say, Fort Benning, except, of course, it's not as modern. It doesn't have cinder block buildings or anything like that, but it's got the, you know, the two-story wood barracks, like Fort Polk, for instance, in Long Bend. The whole place is kind of red-looking because it's all dusty and red clay. I mean, they don't have grass planted everywhere, but they do have a lot of lawns, and they have a lot of sidewalks and things like that there too, but still, it's new. You know, they haven't been going for 50 years like Fort Benning, but I guarantee it's every bit as opposed to Fort Benning. It's got craft shops and PXs and officers clubs and everything. You just wouldn't believe it here. It's really an experience. Of course, it's definitely different from my last tour, I have to admit. I feel like I don't feel any different than I did at Fort Benning, to tell you the truth, except for the fact that I'm away from home. I don't have my loved ones with me, and it's very depressing. But other than that, there's absolutely no difference. There really isn't. If I was a bachelor, I would be just as comfortable here as I was at Fort Benning, and I was just about as far away from Oregon as far as I'm concerned. And anyway, that's the views. But you can't believe this place. We went, while driving around Saigon, I saw, you know, taters, massage joints, furniture stores, interior decoration joints, the same old things. You just can't believe it. Just I imagine you can buy anything in Saigon, you can buy anything anywhere else. You know, if they have a need for it, you can buy it someplace. It's really quite up to date, quite modern. A lot of, you know, boulevards, tree-lined streets, things like this. Really, really interesting. Anyway, enough of that. I'm just about out of tape, and I'm going to have to stop here and drink a Coke, because I'm getting kind of throaty. But anyway, I'll be right back in a second. You won't even miss me. Well, I refreshed my thirst and took a stretch and everything else. What I did yesterday, if you want to, you know, blow-by-blow all day long and see what I did and see it. We left about 12:30 here. I drove down there, went through the back streets and all that. Got there about 1:30, I guess, maybe 1:15. Only it's a 45-minute drive, even though a long way. So, and this is going like 35 miles an hour all the way. So, we got there, and then we got a call from the Air Force saying that their plane was going to be there a couple hours early. So we jumped through our, you know what, and then I found out it was an hour later than they said it was going to be there, which was still an hour early. So everything turned out all right anyway. And things went kind of dead, and we got all the phone calls done. You know, everybody wants to be informed. We got them informed, and then we had nothing to do. So I went over to the Tontonute Air Base, you know, and, well, we're already at Tontonute, but I went over to the officers' club there and decided to splurge. Since I've had only, I splurged three times since I've been in Vietnam. So I'm talking about, you know, like a T-bone steak and all that. So I went over there and splurged, and I got there just before the dining hall closed, I guess about 9:15, it closes at 9:30, I guess. But I went over there and ate my big T-bone steak and walked around a little bit, got kind of the lay of the land, and drove back and stayed up late writing you a letter and read a couple of pistol magazines and things like that. Just kind of, I searched through a couple of drawers and found a deck of cards and played a few hands of solitaire. And anyway, I was really lonely. Tonight, I was really tired that night. I really was lonesome for you, and I wanted to be home. And so I just almost stayed up all night. You know, about 2 o'clock in the morning, I decided to hit the sack. I took off my shirt and my boots and took a couple of cushions off a chair and lay down on them. And mosquitoes carried me away, and I itched and scratched all night long. I got pissed off and everything else. And finally, the morning came, and we're sitting around waiting until about noon before we get some information on the inbound on the next flight, and we found out the plane wasn't even coming, so we turned around and came home. So anyway, I showered up and went over and ate dinner and came back here and had a game of ping pong or two and had a Coke at the club and then came back and I wrote this tape. Now you're up to date, huh? Anyway, I threw another little goodie in the mail for you. I gave you more than just a letter yesterday, so just thought I'd let you know. But anyway, it looks like my tape is running short here, and by the way, the steak was good. The officers club at Tontonute is very similar to the main club at Rucker, except bigger. if you can imagine that. But anyway, that just gives you an idea. And it looks like, I'm going to check here for a second. I might have another 30. Anyway, I checked, and it looks like I have another 30 seconds. So I'm going to say goodbye, and I love you, baby. I love you very much. And you'll be hearing from me again soon. And keep those cards and letters coming. I'll see you later, baby. I'll give you a big hug. There it is, and now a kiss. Okay? Okay. Goodbye, until later.